This week, the U.S. Speaker of the House of Representatives was removed from office.
I can continue to fight, maybe in a different manner. I will not run for Speaker again.
VOA's Steve Herman tells us about two top contenders for the position of Speaker of the House.
There's a lot going on behind the scenes.
And ethnic Armenians are in survival mode after fleeing Nagorno-Karabakh.
Most of the residents that have fled their homes are scattered around Armenia.
Join us on The Voice of America as we explore the issues in the news. Kim Lewis in Washington. For the first time in U.S. history, a Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, who was second in the line of presidential succession, has been removed from office. Facing a challenge from his own party, Republican Kevin McCarthy failed to remain Speaker by a vote of 216 to 210. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
An extraordinary moment in American politics. For the first time ever, the leader of the U.S. House of Representatives has been removed from power.
Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
Republican Representative Matt Gaetz forced a vote on removing McCarthy, expressing frustration at McCarthy's leadership after he failed to pass a government funding bill last week with conservative spending priorities. Republican Representative Matt Gaetz.
I think $33 trillion in debt is chaos. I think that facing a $2.2 trillion annual deficit is chaos. I think that not passing single subject spending bills is chaos.
McCarthy told reporters he would not run again for the role of Speaker.
I can continue to fight, maybe in a different manner. I will not run for Speaker again.
But the slim Republican majority in the House meant that Gaetz needed only 8 Republican votes, along with all Democrats, to oust McCarthy, who faced increasing criticism since agreeing to a debt ceiling deal earlier this year with President Joe Biden. Republican Representative Bob Good.
Many of us had begged the Speaker, pleaded with the Speaker repeatedly to utilize the debt ceiling to leverage spending cuts and reforms. But instead, he negotiated an unlimited increase to the debt ceiling.
Although the majority of Republicans voted to keep McCarthy in leadership, Republican Representative Tom Cole.
Think long and hard before you plunge us into chaos, because that's where we're headed if we vacate the speakership.
It was the votes of Democrats uniting to remove McCarthy that made the difference. Democratic Representative Pramila Jayapal.
We are not voting in any way that would help save Speaker McCarthy.
Democratic Representative Annie Custer.
He is not trustworthy. And I think you can see that within his own caucus, but you can certainly see it the way he's treated us and the American people.
The historic upheaval in the U.S. House comes at a key moment. The short-term government funding deal did not include U.S. aid to Ukraine. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby.
All the House leadership is supportive of continuing to help Ukraine. And the vast majority of House members on the Republican side are in support of continuing to help Ukraine. There's a small number of very vocal, a small minority of vocal members who are pushing back on that, but they don't represent their party. They don't represent their leadership.
U.S. lawmakers will hold elections next week for a new Speaker of the House, the person who is second in the presidential line of succession. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis. With U.S. Congress at a standstill after the removal of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, I spoke once again with Catherine Gibson about what lies ahead as lawmakers face a 6-week deadline to approve spending bills and avoid a government shutdown. Looking at Representative Patrick McHenry, Republican from North Carolina, he was declared the acting speaker. So what is his major role now?
That's right. So this is something of a first. We've never really had a speaker, a temporary speaker in this role, of course, because we've never had a Speaker of the House removed from power before. So he's kind of feeling his way along. He's certainly been very forceful in terms of letting House Democrats know that they need to move out of some of their offices in the U.S. Capitol. There's a sense among the Republicans here on Capitol Hill that they were betrayed by Democrats, that the Democrats should have supported Speaker McCarthy and upheld the institution of the U.S. Congress. And so Patrick McHenry is certainly, you know, making that frustration known. And because of the way that this is all playing out, it's very unclear when there'll be a consensus about a new speaker. McHenry could be in that temporary position for some time.
Yes, that's a really good point. And it appears that those who ousted him had no concrete plan in place. So how will this divide in the Republican Party affect the party's brand, for instance, coming up in the 2024 election?
Well, House Democrats certainly are already saying that this is a symptom of a larger dysfunction within the Republican Party that was begun by former President Donald Trump. They've argued that this shows that the party really isn't cohesive as a political party anymore. Of course, this has been a very chaotic week, a very historic week, and the House has recessed for a week to kind of simmer things down, allow the candidates for the speaker position to put themselves forward, make their case. What we do know is that they will come back into session next Tuesday. They will have a party meeting where all of the candidates will get to make their case about the way forward for the Republican Party in the U.S. House. And then as of now, we are scheduled to have leadership elections next Wednesday. All of this is in the larger context of a looming government shutdown. Remember, we only passed a continuing resolution for short-term funding up here. That funding is set to expire on November 17th, and the House can't vote on any legislation until they elect a new speaker. So this is really something that needs to happen so that they can get back to passing government funding, to figuring out what's going on with Ukraine aid, to all of the important issues that impact the American public.
So then in 6 weeks, if there is no House Speaker elected, then there will be no government funding and therefore a government shutdown?
That is correct. The U.S. House cannot vote, cannot hold hearings, it cannot do any of its regular business until a speaker is elected.
What is the mood on Capitol Hill? I know you said that they're in recess now, but what generally is it like now that this has happened?
I've never seen the House chamber that silent as when it was announced that the post of Speaker was vacant. It was eerie. I mean, I think people, even though they knew that a challenge to McCarthy's leadership was coming, was in the works, it was still astounding to see it actually happen. And I think today it's kind of the calm after the storm when people are stepping back and looking at what all of this means for the Republican Party, for part of the legislative branch of the U.S. government actually functioning. It's certainly a very unusual day up here.
That was VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson.
Pressing issue on Americans' minds is not Ukraine.
It
is the border situation, and it is crime on the streets, and everybody knows that.
That's Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio.
Luckily, they had a plan. They had treatments that have been approved by the FDA for many, many years on this form of cancer that many, many people have been using for decades.
Representative Steve Scalise. Both Republicans are leading candidates to become the next Republican Speaker of the House. I spoke with VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman for insight.
Representatives Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan, the two leading candidates to become the next Republican Speaker of the House, have been working the phones in halls of Capitol Hill to gain support from within their party's divided ranks. So, Steve, and looking at, let's just look at Representative Scalise. He is fighting a form of blood cancer, and he was also shot in the hip back in June of 2017, enduring lengthy hospitalizations, surgeries, and rehabilitation. But he says he would tackle the speaker job with the same energy and strength as he has his past challenges. Does Congress think he's up for this position?
Well, that remains to be seen. As you noted, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And Steve Scalise, who is from Louisiana, has won conference elections before as a majority leader and arguably has better connections with conservatives in his caucus that may be more concerned about actually governing, getting things done. Than trying to be disruptors. And some people will paint Jim Jordan, who is from Ohio and a co-founder of the ultra-conservative House Freedom Caucus, as someone who has a reputation more as a troublemaker than a problem solver. But Jordan, of course, is now head of the powerful House Judiciary Committee and has been targeting President Joe Biden for impeachment.
And former President Donald Trump has endorsed Congressman Jim Jordan, saying he has been a star long before making his, what he says, very successful journey to Washington, D.C. So how will Trump's endorsement help Jordan?
Well, Trump is regarded as the leader of the Republican Party. There were even some members that were talking about possibly nominating Trump as Speaker of the House, because you don't have to be an elected representative to hold that post. But that would be probably short term and purely symbolic. But with Trump's endorsement now, it would seem to tilt the scales somewhat in favor of Jim Jordan. But we should note that both Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise are very conservative, more conservative even than Kevin McCarthy, who was ousted as House Speaker, but someone who did appear in very limited circumstances to work together with the Democrats.
Also, both Scalise and Jordan are facing a very difficult challenge of attempting to unite a very divided Republican conference that is still reeling and maybe even in the days ahead after Kevin McCarthy's removal from the speakership. So can we expect another 15 round of voting before Americans see a new speaker?
It would not be surprising, but one would think that when the Republicans get together next Tuesday and looking at possibly holding the first vote on Wednesday, that there would be somewhat of a consensus where it wouldn't need to go 15 rounds. But as we saw with the process that led to Kevin McCarthy becoming speaker, the Republicans are not uniting very easily when it comes to these sort of tasks.
That was VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Nearly the entire population of ethnic Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh have fled to Armenia in recent days. VOA's Heather Murdock was in Yerevan, the capital city of Armenia, earlier this week and spoke with me about the situation of the ethnic Armenians after their massive and swift exodus.
Most of the residents of Nagorno-Karabakh were ethnic Armenian, and almost all of them have fled. In the past few days and over the weekend, it went from being intensely crowded. People were taking sometimes 48 hours to drive the 100 kilometers from what was the capital of Nagorno-Karabakh to the border of Armenia. And that's only about 100 kilometers, if that. And people were packed into the town squares and the hotels were packed. And by now, most of the residents that have fled their homes are scattered around Armenia. So yesterday we went to a village on the border and met families there who are settling down, like so many families across this country. And they're living in a house that was mostly empty in a town that was not very well populated because it's so close to the border and has been very violent in past times. So a lot of people don't want to live there. And they're doing okay. I mean, they have food and basic supplies for now from local residents. They're worried that these things won't last. And there's also a question of the weather. They're not prepared for the winter. and that housing, that this temporary housing, isn't ready for it.
The Azerbaijani government has said that it has a plan to reintegrate the Armenians into Azerbaijan. Have they offered any specifics yet?
I've heard that. I've heard that there will be some kind of capacity for Armenian, ethnic Armenians to go back even, and to possibly take Azerbaijan up on their offer that they made before of taking Azerbaijani citizenship, and so they could possibly retake their homes. What it means specifically, I don't know, but people here, rightly or wrongly, don't take it that seriously, because when they said, when the Azerbaijani government said, we are going to take over, but you can all take Azerbaijani citizenship if you want to stay, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that everyone would leave. In fact, even the Armenian government thought maybe a third of the people would leave. But everyone left in the span of less than a week, like maybe 4 days, almost the entire population left. So it's hard to imagine that there's going to be a tremendous amount of people going back after this dramatic and swift exit.
Earlier, you mentioned the families and you've talked to some of the families. Are there any separation of family members or displaced children?
I've heard from aid workers that there are still, and they are working to reunite people. I mean, in the past few days, the people who were separated on their way to Armenia have largely found each other because, you know, a lot of people were cut off from the internet or mobile phones. But when they got here, the one thing that was really easily available was SIM cards for people's phones, and they got back in touch. However, one thing that has not been solved, and no one's quite sure if it will be, is that there are still people missing, possibly or likely presumed dead from the conflict in September. And that was only 2 days, but it was a bloody 2 days. And a lot of people stayed behind in Nagorno-Karabakh when everyone was fleeing to try to find their loved ones. And a lot of those even left without finding them because they heard, again, rightly or wrongly, that the road to Armenia was going to close and it was our last chance to go.
And is the international community concerned over a humanitarian crisis?
There has been concern from international aid groups and the United Nations and major powers, including the U.S., about the humanitarian issues that come from such a huge displacement. And there is aid coming in. The extent of how much aid is needed isn't quite clear at this point. When I was talking to aid workers a couple of days ago, they were saying that they were still doing needs assessments, which means that they can't really decide how to divvy up what they have or even what exactly they need until they have interviewed and assessed the situation, interviewed the people. I met some people who were staying in a small town near the border a couple of days ago who said that they had met people from the Red Cross who had come and other aid workers had come and asked what they needed. So clearly these workers are on the ground doing this. But the people I met were also quite angry because they said, why do people keep asking us what we need? Where is it? We don't have anything. Everything we have has come from the locals around this town and they're going to be tired of giving us stuff, any day now. So the humanitarian needs are there, and there are people that appear to be trying to address them, but they haven't quite gotten there to have the actual humanitarian needs to disperse in a long term to deal with how this 120,000 or close to that people are going to live long term in Armenia.
That was VOA's Heather Murdock speaking to me from Yerevan, the capital city of Armenia. According to the Centers for Disease Control, some people who were infected with the virus that causes COVID-19 can also experience long-term effects following their initial infection. VOA's Rick Pantaleo spoke with Ashok Gupta, the founder and CEO of two health tech companies, about the effectiveness of his groups in treating patients with long COVID.
Long COVID is a condition with a set of symptoms that people contract after they've had the COVID-19 infection. And for most people, they heal perfectly normally from COVID-19, but about 10 to 30% of people go on to having lingering symptoms. And those lingering symptoms, the majority of them involve exhaustion, fatigue, potentially sore throat, so immune type symptoms. Then they also have cognitive issues such as brain fog, headaches, and mental fatigue and tiredness. And they also go on to having often digestive issues as well. So a whole suite of different lingering symptoms that compromises their quality of life. Generally, those linger for about a few weeks after the condition. And we know that between 2 to 5% of people who have COVID-19, they go on to having long-term symptoms post 3 months.
So who is likely to get long COVID? Any special differences in people that may make one person sick with this disease while others never get this form of COVID?
The research is still in its infancy, but what we do know is that women are disproportionately affected. So we tend to find at our clinic that 70 to 80% of people who come to us with long COVID are female, and that's genuine. Also reflected in the general stats in the population. So that's quite interesting. And also people who have a history of other chronic diseases, such as diabetes or indeed hypertension, high blood pressure, they're also more prone to contracting long COVID.
Please tell us about the Gupta program conducted study. Amygdala and insula retraining significantly reduces fatigue and increases energy in people with long COVID. Tell us about that study.
Yeah, so millions of people are suffering from long COVID around the world. In the US, they estimate, you know, between 10 to 20 million people are suffering. And so we're talking tens of millions around the world. And there isn't much option in terms of treatment for those patients. So at our clinic, we've been treating chronic diseases for 20 to 25 years. And we found that we were also getting people better from long COVID. So we decided to go out to medical institutions and see if we could get an independent medical trial started. And so an independent randomized control trial was conducted where they compared the Gupta program to a wellness program. And that wellness program involved sleep, diet, exercise, meditation, you know, all the kind of things we know are good for us. And they compared those treatments to the Gupta program, which is the brain retraining neuroplasticity. And they found that after 3 months in the Gupta program group, the Gupta program was 4 times more effective at reducing fatigue and exhaustion and twice as effective at increasing levels of energy in the participants. And that was published in July 2023. And it's a groundbreaking result because so far, there's little options for treatment for people with long COVID, and this offers hope to millions who are suffering with it.
Long COVID symptoms, I understand, is compared to other chronic conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome. What are some of the causes behind long COVID and chronic fatigue syndrome?
Well, I think that in our hypothesis, we believe that the COVID-19 infection is a trigger of chronic fatigue syndrome. So although we're calling it long COVID, we believe, in essence, it's very similar with a lot of crossovers with chronic fatigue syndrome. And in terms of the causes behind it, in our hypothesis, we believe that when people go through COVID-19 infection, similarly with chronic fatigue syndrome, they might contract that from flu, for instance. The body fights off the initial virus, so it fights off the COVID-19 infection. But in those small number of cases, it leaves a legacy in the brain, a legacy of what we call hyperdefensiveness. The brain learns to hyperstimulate the immune system and nervous system to ensure survival. And if you think about it, that makes sense, that the brain is primed for survival. And if there's a particularly intensive infection that someone experiences, the brain may err on the side of caution and continue to trigger the immune responses long after the infection has gone away. And so we believe that chronic fatigue syndrome, like long COVID, are essentially syndromes where the nervous system and the immune system have now got stuck in a state of hyperstimulation. And the purpose of neuroplasticity and brain retraining is to train the brain out of that hyper response and bring the whole system back to balance and back to homeostasis.
I understand you've developed an app related to long COVID.
Yes, that's right. So the Gupta program used to only be available on the web, but now we have our own app. And the benefit of having an app is that it's then accessible to anyone in the world really easily. They simply have to download the app and they can begin using the neuroplasticity and brain retraining tools on day one.
Could you share your thoughts and comments on the National Institutes of Health launching several clinical trials related to treatment for long COVID patients?
I think this is great news. I think that a lot of the research money previously for the NIH in terms of long COVID has gone into essentially observational studies where they've been looking at symptoms, they've been looking at prevalence. And I think that the fact that the NIH is now looking to actual treatments is good news for patients.
Ashok Gupta is founder and CEO of 2 health tech businesses. He's also a speaker, a filmmaker, and a health practitioner. Ashok Gupta, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us about long COVID.
Yes, thank you very much.
That was VOA's Rick Pantaleo speaking with Ashok Gupta, founder and CEO of two health tech companies. That's all the time we have this week. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for listening. For more news throughout the week, listen to International Edition Monday through Friday or visit us anytime at voanews.com. Join us next week for more Issues in the News. Until then, I'm Kim Lewis.